just a couple weeks ago, I saw a play that, you know, it was about Anne Frank, and it was about so much more than Anne Frank in the way that it actually is traditionally done. And I, you know, you grow up in this country with even a modicum, just a tiny bit of sense about what's happened in the world, and the horrors that have been unleashed for forever, basically, around this. And this country now, you think about what's happening on the borders and what they're being doing everywhere else to people, what they're threatening with Iran, all this, you know, all of this. And to me, I looked at it and I thought, okay, well, this will be interesting. But, you know, then initially I said, oh, well, but I've seen so much about Anne Frank. And then I read, it's Anne Frank, but it's not the way you read it. So I wanted to thank each of you people for coming in today. And we're being joined by the director, is it Eve Brandstein or Brandstein?
Brandstein.
Okay, there you go. See? and I'm going to try this. Abba Lalazarzada.
Lalazarzada. Yeah, perfect.
Okay, I'm just going to call you Abba. Okay, and you're in the play. You star as you are Annie and Rob Brownstein.
Stein.
Okay. this is the, okay. I'm
Igor.
Just going to call you from now on.
Call
I'm going to call
Igor.
You. Okay. There you go. And basically, we're going to jump into this and really hit at this because it was one of the most powerful plays I've seen in a little while.
Wow.
And I've seen the Anne Frank story many times in different ways. But this was actually something that sort of leapt off the stage and just sort of, you know, put you there. I mean, because you're sitting there and you're thinking, wait a minute, I know this whole, you know, this whole play, but then you're looking at Abba, your character, and you're saying, wait a minute, this is a smart aleck, bossy, you know, look, going around trying to figure out acting like living just in the world.
Right.
And then it's actually very interesting too, Rob, for your character, how you sit there and you're the stabilizing force, but in the middle of it all, you also have a deep understanding of what seems to be approaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that speaks volumes to what's happening today. So I'm going to open up, though, first with I want to talk to Eve and ask you, Eve, for people who might not know about Anne Frank, just a brief description of who she is and why you felt it was important to have this play now.
Well, Anne Frank was a 13-year-old diarist who kept extensively brilliant journals with deep insights about what it was like for her during a time of 2 years while she was in an annex, hiding from the impending doom that eventually did claim all the Frank family and all those that lived in the annex with her. But it reflects what any teenage girl, in a way, had to endure, living in sort of in these quarters, but also the dreams, passions, desires of her life. The way we created this play, this production based on this script, was to try to create a sense that it belonged to us as an audience as much as it did to the audience viewing it. They were part of it. So had an immersive experience, number one, and also we reflect the possibility that what if Anne Frank had survived. And that's how we opened the play, with asking the audience to be part of this experience, because the actors join the audience and then go up on stage. So it has a Pirandellian effect, and then it starts telling us a story about Anne Frank, if she had been able to live to be 20, what it would have been like for her. And then we go into the backstory of this known story, but from this new perspective that a novice can reflect on that, about what it was like to play a more original, fresh version of Anne.
Yeah, that's just where I was going to go. So, Abba, let's talk about that, because it's that and about your portrayal of Anne, where you know where it ends in your own mind, mm-hmm. but still you're celebrating their ability to live. And the way that it's portrayed is like, what if?
Right.
But then you're doing that against the background of, I know what if meant when it happened, mm-hmm. you know. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think what's so interesting about this version of the play is that we know exactly how it ends, but we have this scenario in which she survives, right? And so these two different worlds diverging together makes it all the more powerful when we discover in the end that she doesn't survive, even though we know it from the very beginning. One of my main goals for the for doing it was that I think she's become such a pinnacle figure and has become almost idolized and non-human that I really wanted to center her back down and show that, you know what, she's just a girl. She's just a girl growing into her womanhood, and these are the circumstances that she's been given, and she's going to try to make... She's going to live. She's going to live and make it work despite the current circumstances.
And what's heavy there is that everybody knows that she isn't going to live, and the fact that so much is like just concentrated in all that, mm-hmm. you know, because you're sitting there watching it and you're wishing, you're thinking, oh, if it had turned out differently, but it didn't, mm-hmm. you know, and she was one of countless numbers of other people who her story was told, but all these other people whose stories weren't told, which is, to me, it was really gripping. And you know, Rob, I wanted to ask you too, because your character has to actually hold everything together to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
And with the sort of the just mind-boggling, the mind-boggling task you have of keeping everybody to have a little bit of hope that they might get out, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's something that must have been really kind of very difficult, and you did a very good job at it.
Thank you.
Sure. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, I mean, I think Ovid touched on it. I think, you know, remembering that they're people mm-hmm. is the first thing. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not just symbols or ideas or a book we read back in middle school or high school. And then, you know, for me, that part really wasn't that difficult because I'm a parent, you know, and all I had to do was say, well, what if this were happening now, which sadly enough doesn't seem quite so far-fetched, and how would I do it? You know, and I would do my best for everybody, and you have to have hope. Otherwise, what are you doing? Why are you staying? Why are you hiding in an annex in the hope that you're going to outlive the war? You know, and I think these people all thought that they were going to make it. And, you know, sort of the irony is that it was really at the end. They almost made it. They get caught right at the end. And then I think when you were talking about stories, I think one of the things that comes through in this play, which it just kills me every night, is that the only reason that we have Anne's diary is that there was some Nazi officer who was mean to a little girl and wouldn't let her take her diary with her when they took her and made her leave it. And so there it was, and now it became this huge thing, you know?
Well, one of the things with the book, because it really did get me, it's like sort of that was sort of a spit in the face of all the people that tried to get rid of them. When you had that character, the agent,
the publisher.
When she was pitching the book to him, it was like you're sitting there saying, "Wow, this is you know, wow, the guy, you know." And even though you know it, you know, intellectually you know what happened, but it was
a great story. Yeah. Make a movie. Yeah,
right, exactly. But it's also the thing that got to me too. And I think, you know, you're talking about this, and we're looking at all the things that happened, but you're also looking at Anne Frank that we don't normally get to see a lot of, which is, you know, a young girl who is, you know, basically loving and who is loved by many people, but who also can be a pain in the butt, mm-hmm. you know, it's not humanizing, but it's actually concentrating a lot of contradictions in there, but it's actually up against all this stuff that she's facing, none of the people in that house, no one in the world, you think about how many people were slaughtered in that sense. And to me, it was just sort of what was captured in this play was the essence of that. You know, it was sort of you guys were able to bring things to people to help them see the humanity.
Good. You know? Well, I'm glad. I'm glad you saw that, man, because that's what we worked on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
know? Now,
I have an idea. I mean, I have a thought. I just wanted
to
speak about it. I just had a thought that somewhere in one of those immigration centers right now, there's a 13-year-old girl with this soul.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah.
She's
go ahead.
She's in a cage or she's behind a fence and she's dreaming about what it'd be like if she could, you know, express her soul or be where she wanted to be. So the dreams of 13 and 14-year-old teenage girls are sort of the same throughout time in a way. And also, in Anne's case, she had fabulous ideas about what life was and what she wanted. And she was a human being. And I think what Rob said about these are real people, I think that's one of the things that the play allows us to see. And we tried to go with as much of a diverse cast so that you could get a feeling that this could be anybody's story, not just this particular period. With great respect, we do have those people that we have to be in memory of from that story, but we wanted it to stand as an example of these are stories that other people would identify with.
Well, it's all through history. I mean, straight from the Holocaust till now, I have a colleague who I've been helping him with a screenplay he wrote about the Japanese internment camps. George Takei is coming out with a memoir of his childhood. You know, it's all these connections. And you're right. I mean, every one of them could write this diary, anyone.
Mm-hmm. All right. Unfortunately, we're going to have to rush because
okay,
I want to also get the people. Can one of you give the times and place when where it's playing?
Yeah, so we're in the Annex in Amsterdam from 19...
No, I meant right now.
No, right now. We're at the Museum of Tolerance.
I was like, where are we?
We're at the Museum of Tolerance, which is over in West L.A. on Pico and Roxbury. Mm-hmm. It's two shows on Sunday, 3 and 7, and one on Monday night at 8.
Right. And you can get your tickets at museumoftolerance.com.
Correct.
Great. And don't miss it, folks.
I also encourage people, if you can, because the museum also does a thing where you can see the show and also visit the museum. Please visit the museum. They're amazing people. It's an amazing place.
Right. And I have to say, it's like, Eve, you said that this isn't a simple history lesson, but it's a resonant clarion call, and I thought that would be something that you could speak to in a minute as we go out. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes, please come and see this, and remember, we're here for each other. And Anne always said, you know, it's never too late to be there for others, to care and to imagine the possibilities. So I would like to say that this will also inspire people to do something and take action, as well as feel what the past has given us, which is some sorrow and some hope. We have to have hope.
And, you know, never forget those people, too, that are, like, as you said, as you were saying earlier, you know, the people who are in the cages now. And I was thinking about that. I was thinking about the one example of the young child, the baby, and the father on the bank of the river.
Yeah.
And what that concentrated. And, folks, this cannot be allowed to continue to go on. So with that said, I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Sure. And I'm going to be sending dozens of people to come and see this, so keep it up, all right?
Please.
Okay. All right. Take care now.
No.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate, and it's KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. And I want to thank all of my guests today and each and every one of you for tuning in.